This is episode 2 with Reverend Susan Nason, who is here today to share tips on how to talk so our kids will listen and communicate with us. Welcome to Conversations with Yvette. I'm your host, Yvette Jane, mom of two, yoga teacher, and blogger. In each episode, we bring you advice from parenting experts or real talk from other parents to help you keep calm through the ups and downs of parenting. Thanks for spending some time with us. Now let's tune in. Reverend Susan Nason, who calls herself the Parent Whisperer. I've heard Susan speak at the Mandel School in the past, and she has offered some great parenting tips to those of us who may have struggled with conflicts on how to communicate to our children so that they will listen. Susan, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you for inviting me to participate in this podcast. I'm excited to share many effective and compassionate parenting skills with your audience. My aunt, Adele Faber, about 43 years ago, wrote How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. And lucky for me, she trained me how to run the workshops that we put together. And I've been doing this internationally for about 40 years. And I'm happy to share my wisdom with all of you.
So can you tell us a little bit about your mantra? I know I read that you have a mantra that it's like a very methodical way of how to approach certain situations where we find ourselves, where we want our kids to listen to what we have to say and to engage with them. And so that we can connect with them in a way that is effective. Can you tell us about that mantra?
I can. It's my parenting mantra. And what it does is it reminds us of three steps that I wish they were simple, but they're not. Three steps that help us remain calm and available for our children. Before I share that mantra, I want to say that the one thing that I think about in parenting is I want to stay connected to my children. I want to make sure they know they can come to me and talk about anything and everything that's on their mind, even if it's something that's negative, even if it's something that perhaps another parent might feel that they need punishment around. I don't believe in any form of punishment, which we can talk a little bit about also. I want to keep that energetic umbilical cord that connects me to my child pulsing so that they know that they are safe with me, that I see them and I hear them. So the parenting mantra has three steps, and the first one is acknowledging feelings. The second step is usually offering a choice. It might be giving information. It might be a combination of many other things that we work on in the workshop, the How to Talk workshop. The third step is setting limits. So we all think that we acknowledge our children's feelings, but if we pay attention to the words we use, often what we're really doing is enforcing our agenda. We're shutting them down to move them from one activity to the next, from doing their homework to getting ready for bed, without acknowledging that they're tired, they're frustrated, they may be scared. They may be so happy and they want to tell us about something, but we want to get them into bed. So just by saying something like, I see you have a lot to tell me tonight. Why don't we plan Saturday morning brunch that you can tell me everything that's on your mind? And that's, of course, if it's not something urgent. If it's urgent, I know we all stop and pay attention to our children. The second step of offering choices. So we're usually really good with our threats. If you don't do this, this will happen, or if you do this, this will happen, and the reverse, if you do this, this won't happen. So anything that we could say as a threat, that if-then statement, we can change into a choice. And we preface it by saying, you have a choice. You could do this, or you could do that. So that way, children know that they have some autonomy. Most of your children will push back and say, well, I want to do it this way. And if that's something that's agreeable to you, let them do it that way. if it doesn't fit into your schedule or your agenda, you could say, I hear you want to do it that way. Today, these are your two choices. And the reason we offer a choice is because then when it's time to set that limit, we know we've given our children a chance. We know that they could have picked A or B. So what we might say, if they don't pick one of the things that we've offered them, we could say, I see you can't decide right now. I'm going to decide for you. And then we have what Laura Markham calls a scheduled meltdown. That's when children tend to fall apart because we've set a limit. The reason that I know that this skill works to help keep us patient is because we've offered them a choice. We've given them a chance to choose. We then have to set the limit. So even if they're upset, we can still stay strong and not get angry.
What are some tips that you have for parents to keep calm in the moment?
So when people work with me, I often talk about what should we do in the moment and what do we do offline. So there's a lot of background work that needs to be done to help us stay calm. And one of them is establishing what our family values and rules are and sharing that with the children. One way to share with children is to model the behavior. Another is to broadcast, to say out loud or to narrate what it is that you expect and want your children to do. We can't always stay calm. We need to learn the art of apology. Again, that's modeling behavior for our children. We've made a mistake. We've yelled at them. We've done something that felt uncomfortable to us in the moment. And we can go back and say, hey, I really shouldn't have raised my voice. I'm sorry. And that's not the time to then say, but you should have, and try to teach them the lesson. But the biggest part about staying calm, the biggest thing to keep in mind is if you acknowledge your child's feelings, if you say, wow, you're tired, wow, you're sad, wow, you're upset, oh my goodness, you sound so angry, what happens is that energetic umbilical cord really starts pulsing. You'll find that you're leaning into your child instead of putting up a boundary that they have to push against, so that you do remain in control. You're able to say, I hear what you're saying, I hear how you're feeling. Right now, this is what we need to do, even though that's hard for you. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I think it's really beautiful.
Thank you.
So I have I have a community of moms, and I've reached out to a couple of them to see what they wanted to know. And so one question we had was, how do we deal with kids' expectations when their needs are so immediate? So, for example, a child who's about 4 years old, you know, he wants ice cream, and maybe it's like late in the afternoon or dinner time, and you know, the mom wants her son to eat dinner first and then have ice cream. And, you know, as timing and luck would have it, they eat dinner, but they don't really have time for ice cream. So they go to bed, and the next morning, that child is stuck on getting that ice cream. And now the mom says, well, you can have it after lunch, with good reason, right? Because you want the child to eat healthy food and have a stable, you know, blood sugar level before infusing it with ice cream. So how would you address this issue when the child's screaming and crying because he doesn't want to eat lunch? He just wants his ice cream.
Great question. Thank you, whoever submitted that. So those three steps, the parenting mantra, works very well in this situation. Acknowledge that child's feelings. Wow. You're disappointed you didn't have ice cream last night, and now you really want it. You're going to acknowledge the feelings. You could offer a choice. You could say something like, I'm so sorry, let me get a little drink here. Just a second. You could say something like, should we write down which flavor do you want, or after lunch do you want to decide what flavor? So a four-year-old might still push back, rightfully so. You promised, I want the ice cream now, you're the worst mommy in the world, I hate you, I'm not inviting you to my birthday party. Acknowledge those feelings. Wow, you're so angry at me that you hate me right now. It's hard to wait for ice cream. don't go back on your word and give it at lunch, but also don't give it before lunch, even though you missed that opportunity at night. The limit setting here is that you're going to hold your ground. You're not going to give in just because your child has a temper tantrum. Let's also talk a little bit about brain development for four-year-olds. They are still in that healthy, egocentric period. The part of the brain, the frontal cortex, that needs to develop for children to understand cause and effect, right from wrong, to know that if they throw a pebble in a pond, it causes a ripple. They need to know that they are the pebble that causes the ripple in life. Doesn't develop until they're between 6 and 8. And for girls, it doesn't fully develop until they're 25, and for men, until they're 30. So we need to keep in mind what's age appropriate for a child's reaction. And certainly for them, one of the most important things in their life is to get ice cream, to get those sweets. So their meltdown is understandable. Once we've decided we're setting the rule, we're setting that limit, and once they realize that we mean business, they will most likely back off.
Okay. How much leeway would you give with them? How much negotiation would you give to a four-year-old? And I'm just asking the question.
I think I may need a more specific. So we all have sort of our rules and expectations, our family values, what's important to us. So going back to this idea about having ice cream, a lot of parents might say, it's not worth the battle, I'm going to give it to them for breakfast. And that's your family value, I would go with it. If you're not invested enough to withstand their pushback, all it's going to do is backfire. And we don't have to be consistent with setting those rules. You know, one day you wake up with a migraine or a friend called and is upset and you need to get back to the phone, give that child the ice cream. It's not worth having the battle at that point. But if you're concerned about nutrition, your child's weight, your child's energy level, because they'll have a sugar crash later on, then we need to say to ourselves, I can put up with my child's pushback. I can put up with the tears. I can put up with the name calling. And because, for me, because I've done the steps, I've acknowledged the feelings, I've offered a choice, I can then set the limit without it testing my patience.
Okay, that's very interesting. I think it's a great method we can all try. I think any tips and strategies are very welcome with parents who struggle to get their child to do something that they don't necessarily want to do in the moment. Certainly, us parents want to work with our children and to make things as smooth as process as possible, but sometimes we do have to set boundaries. Okay, I have another question. This one is about talking back and how to address children talking back to their parents. So one of my other moms says she feels like her son mirrors her frustration, and she's been working hard on, you know, not yelling at him and not being upset, trying to be more patient. But she finds that her son challenges her more than her partner. And he'll say things to her like, you're going to go to jail, or you apologize to me, you know? So the child is basically turning on the parent. And so what tips and tools do you have in this situation?
That's another great question. Do you know how old this child is?
Yeah, he's also about 4. There's a trend here.
So there's a great series of books. They might be out of print. Maybe you can find them on eBay or Amazon or something, called My 1-Year-Old, My 2-Year-Old, My 3-Year-Old. So the title of My 4-Year-Old, they're individual books, the title of My 4-Year-Old I think says Friend or Foe, and within the book it describes how fours are incredibly fresh. That's the hallmark. It's a milestone, in fact, that fours are fresh. And they also say it's a glimpse of your teenager. So watch out, Mama. That Mama that asked that question.
I've heard like terrible twos, three nagers, yeah. And four nados, right?
Yes, 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 exactly. So my wonderful boss, Ellen Zeman, who was the director of First Presbyterian Church Nursery School for many years during my tenure there, used to say a child's job, his job, his or her job, is to want bigger, better, and more. So it's really their job to push back as much as possible. So when children are rude to us or fresh to us in that moment, so here's what I said before, that I talk about what to do in the moment and what to do, you know, the behind the scenes or the offline conversations. In the moment, try to just address the feelings. Wow, you're so angry at me that you're saying those things to me. You're so angry to me that you're telling me I'm going to end up in jail. So it's sort of that pink elephant in the room. This kid's angry. We're going to talk about it. And we're going to talk about it out loud. Without saying, don't be rude, ask me in a different way. We're not going to do any of that as the first step. We're going to acknowledge that child's feelings. The second step might be giving information or offering a choice. You might say, when you speak to me that way, or when you tell me you're going to put me in jail, it hurts my feelings and I don't feel like cooperating right now. And the choice might be, can you find another way to ask me? There's probably no limit that needs to be set in that moment. What you might do when it's not going on is problem solving. And those of you who have the How to Talk book, it's chapter 3 in that book. This is a great time for me to say, if any of you are interested in putting together a workshop, maybe Yvette, it might be something that you're leaning towards, putting together a workshop. We could meet and go through it chapter by chapter.
Right. So this is the book, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen.
Yes, correct, by Faber and Maislish. Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, fantastic, yeah, and I can absolutely organize something and get back to you if there's of interest. And I'm also wondering if underneath it all is just understanding our own feelings and being able to connect with our feelings, communicate our feelings, and model that for our kids. That is like that's kind of the underlying strategy within all of this. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. There's a time and place to share with children that you're angry, you're frustrated. One of the chapters in their first book, actually, the How to Talk was the second. Their first book is Liberated Parents, Liberated Children. One of the chapters is Parents Are Humans Too. And it talks about how we definitely have needs and frustrations. And we can say that out loud. You could say to your child, I'm so angry right now, what I need is everyone to cooperate. Or I'm so tired right now, I need everyone to cooperate. Or I'm so hungry right now, I need everyone to come to the table so we can all eat. Absolutely, sharing our how we're feeling is modeling behavior. It also, often, if we say it out loud, short circuits a child's tantrum or demands or lack of cooperation. Because they're on notice if they don't want the situation to escalate, if they don't want their mom to become a raging loon, they need to cooperate.
So it also acknowledges that we as parents, we're human too, and it's okay to be human, and there's no expectation for us to be perfect either. And
absolutely.
And they'll probably feel like, you know, that it's okay to weigh the feel that, it's okay to feel the way they do.
Yep.
Okay, awesome. I did have another question. Someone had asked, you know, is there a difference between girls and boys as to when they typically have their peak for tantrums? Some parents think that maybe boys have their peak worst moments when they're 2-3 years old versus girls or a little bit later, like around 4, like, you know, the consistent tantrums every morning trying to go to school.
I don't even know if there's been any research about that. I can't answer that, but what I can say is if you start using these skills, acknowledge feelings, offer choices, set limits, and you're consistent in doing that, you don't have to be consistent about your rule. You have to be consistent about getting the information about the rule in that moment. If you've been doing this consistently, and you're into a month or 6 weeks of doing this, and your child's still having meltdowns and tantrums, I would suspect and I would look for sensory integration issues.
Mm-hmm.
We all have sensory integration issues, each and every one of us. Most of us have learned how to cope with them. I, for one, need soft clothing on my body. I can't stand, you know, the old-fashioned blue jeans or even corduroy sometimes. I want velvet and silk and satin. For some kids, bright light triggers them. For some children, certain food. If it's crunchy, it's actually too loud for them. They can hear it when they chew. They go into a crowded place and they become incredibly shy when this child was at home belting out songs. So if your child's melting down and it seems to you that it doesn't make much sense for the situation, I would check for sensory integration issues.
And how would you communicate with children that have this? How would it differ?
It would take them to an occupational therapist. Mm-hmm. We give them exercises and routines and coping skills. They actually teach children how to soothe themselves when there's sensory overload. And for many children, some children have low arousal, so those children learn how to pull themselves together when they have to go do something,
mm-hmm.
because they are sensory avoiders. So we have sensory seekers and we have sensory avoiders. Mm-hmm. And each and every one of us fall into one of those categories.
Mm-hmm.
On some spectrum level.
As far as parenting and discipline, would you treat them any differently versus, say, a child with...
I would always use this method, acknowledge feelings, offer choices, set limits. Those of us who have our own sensory issues or live with people or children that have them, is we start to figure out what's going to trigger them. So we would change possibly their environment, possibly how we pitch our voice. But no, the behavior expectations will be the same and can be reached.
Okay, awesome. So this is super helpful. I'm wondering, too, because I think this is a really fantastic method. For those of us who, you know, every family has a different arrangement. Some have, you know, both parents living in a household. Some have separated, etc. How can this work when parents have different parenting styles? So, like, the mom has one style, the dad has another style. How can this all work so that you know it can be consistent?
Great question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my personal experience is my now ex-husband and I were on opposite ends of the parenting spectrum. Opposite ends. I have a very different relationship with my adult daughter now than he has. And that's something to keep in mind. Going back to that system, whoever you're parenting with sees the success and starts saying, hey, how'd you do that? Or they pick up the book and read it. Or because you're modeling the behavior, they pick it up by osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
It causes way too much friction in a marriage to tell your partner that they're wrong in how they parent. Especially in front of the child, it undermines your authority and theirs at the same time. And your child doesn't feel safe. Is it a discussion to have at another time? Absolutely. In a way that you support the other person. You might say, hey, I do it this way. Did you notice it worked? I'm wondering if you want me to tell you what the steps are to do it. Instead of accusing them or blaming them. So this method, the how to talk method, works on anyone, any age, as long as they're verbal. So most of my clients start using this with their own husbands or wives.
So this is really, a guide for relationships, too.
Exactly. It's communication skills for anyone, any place.
Yeah, this is fantastic. You can use it for, I guess, your coworkers or your friends.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. This is really great. So I also wanted to ask you when you plan to host your next workshop and where we can find you.
Thanks for asking. So my workshops usually form because I get a phone call from someone who wants to start working with me and they are willing to put together a group. So I will put that out there. Someone wants to organize a group. My next opening is in the spring. I'm booked until, I think, mid or the end of March. I do private consultations, either in person or by phone. I have an international practice. So I have nothing that I can offer you coming up, but if someone wants to put something together, please reach out to me.
Okay, so with that said, I think that I've asked all my questions. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know that my moms will really appreciate it. I appreciate you for spending your time and talking. Thanks for listening to Conversations with me, Yvette Jane. If you like our show and want to know more about Susan Nason, check out her website, theparentwhisperer.ny.com. I posted the links to her site and workshops on my site, YvetteJane.com. Join us next week when we talk about managing our time so we can balance work, parenting, relationships, and self-care with Julie Morgenstern, author of Time to Parent.